Irish Illustrated Insider is sponsored by VisitSouthBend.com. Is it time to check a Notre Dame home game off your bucket list? Has it been too long since you've soaked in the game day atmosphere in person? Whether it's for the first time ever or in a while, start planning your trip to South Bend to watch the Fighting Irish with ideas and inspiration at VisitSouthBend.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated. We're joined by Pete Sampson of The Athletic, and Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated is back from the late night talk show tour. I think we saw him on Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon last night. Are you on The View? Okay, those aren't sports related.
No, it's not, but there's a human interest story there, so I might go on it still. I'm not sure.
Tim O'Malley getting a lot of airtime this week with his exchange with Marcus Freeman on Monday, which was, give Freeman a lot of credit. That was classic, man. He had notes.
The notes were incredible. The notes were amazing. I mean, I had a feeling something was coming because he was, as I said, we were out there for 5.5 hours, you know, not like we're interacting the whole time, but he was out there for 5.5 hours. We walked in and walked out together. And he walked in and I got a look. I was like, he's saying something here. And I knew it wasn't going to be like flattering. So I just didn't know he was going to have a lot of notes on topic.
What would he have done if you hadn't asked a question that day? I think
I talked to him. Pete about this. Either Pete or someone else told me you should not have asked a question and he was still going to ask it. And it would have been hilarious if he had to like interrupt and ask the question.
I guess I should, not everybody. I don't know where you've been the last few days, but I'm sure not everybody listening to this knows exactly what we're talking about. But Tim O'Malley is the two championships in one day. That's not easy to do, but two flag football championships with a total of how many children from the Notre Dame coaching staff? Five?
There's five on one, and then another one, Freeman's other older son on the 4-5, Gino.
And that's so. And that's Guidulli, Washington, Parker, Freeman.
And Rudolph.
Yeah.
Who had a double pick six game a couple of weeks ago, I should point out.
Is anybody complaining with the commissioner of the league that O'Malley got all these coaches' kids playing?
Actually, the entire team goes to St. Pius, so it's all on the up and up. It's not NIL-related yet. It's going to have to be NIL-related now going forward. But
I can remember my pre-high school coaching days when little league parents were accusing us of loading up on the team. I wasn't able to manufacture who we had on the.
No, friends play with friends, request friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that is how it always comes out.
Exactly. Well, congratulations on all the publicity for you and for Irish Illustrated as well. But we will move on to the Pittsburgh preview. We spoke with Marcus Freeman, man, for about 10 minutes. It was short today. Nothing groundbreaking. No injury questions. So I think we're all counting on the two Jadens, Greathouse and Thomas, to be ready to roll. Deion Colsey not, because we were getting ready for interviews on Tuesday, and I looked out the window. You were there, Tim, right? You saw me. There was Deion Colsey walking out of practice, and Marcus Freeman had said on Monday that he was behind schedule, and it goes without saying that he's way behind schedule because he wasn't moving too well. So, there's certainly nothing in line until after the second bye week, and even that would be unexpected. But Pittsburgh's not very good, man. They're not a very good team. But, you know, when I write out the preview, you go through all the players that have played for Pittsburgh, man. They've had some
great saw that players. On your Thursday thoughts.
Yeah.
You got to look this up on his Thursday thoughts.
Yeah, I saw it.
Insane.
I mean, they had
great players come through there. And
Dorsett, Marino, like all that stuff is crazy.
I mean, they went. Last year, no, I'm sorry, 2021 was the first year in 11 that Pittsburgh had less than five losses. And I get, you know, most of that list that I put out there was, you know, former greats around the time when they were competing for and winning a national title. But there's been a ton of talent that's come through there. And, you know, they're dangerous because they do have guys like, you know, a couple wide receivers, Bub Means, who's pretty good. Dejon Reynolds, who's a transfer for them. They've got quite a few transfers. I really like their corners, MJ Devonshire and AJ Woods are two in particular. I know we mentioned these guys
ahead
of schedule on Monday, but they've got some players, but they're not a very good football team. I see that Narduzzi was complaining about
penalty. You can just stop right there. You saw I was complaining, and then it's probably accurate. Right. I
mean, they've been in the ranked in the hundreds for five straight years now in penalties, man. And frankly, I know some officials in the ACC, and although he's a whiner, they like him personally. So nobody has an agenda against Pat Narduzzi. Your team's just undisciplined, man.
Yeah, I need to make sure no one ever says we like him, but he's a whiner. That's not the way to be. That's not the way to be portrayed in life.
It's hard to do that.
It is, actually.
Well, he's
funny otherwise.
He didn't talk about the false.
No, I was going to say, like, media members who know him like him. I mean, he's pretty accessible. I think he would be high on my list of coaches to have a beer with. That would probably be a good time. I think that he would be pretty funny. But yeah, he's got something stuck up somewhere about Notre Dame. And yes. It's like the how do you know you're complaining? Your lips are moving. Like that's how probably you would describe Pat Narduzzi.
And he frequently does complain, but the timing of this one. Just watch the calls on Saturday. They'll be even at the worst, because if you complain to the head of officials of the ACC often enough, it will make an impact. Although you can't pre-snap penalties, of which they've had a ton, especially in the last games. You can't blame those on officials.
You know, Tim, I think you made up an interesting point where you said their fit's not that good, and they're not. But when you say Devin, Sharon, Woods, they have two good corners. Notre Dame has receivers that have trouble getting open or consistently getting open and catching passes. And Pitt does have a top 30 pass defense. I know that's not incredible, but it's solid. A top 15 or 16 in terms of how many sacks they have. Not incredible, definitely not for Pitt, but still good. Those two things combined against Notre Dame's weakness, that's what makes a game closer than it should be. Because you find there's something in there that can make a game closer than it should be, and that's it.
If you have good corners, shouldn't your passive, you know what their pass efficiency defense rating is?
You know, it's nowhere near what the yardage allowed is.
Yeah. It's 98.
Yeah. It's a strange.
Which doesn't make any sense. Like Notre Dame is fourth. It was strange to me. Because when I think of Pittsburgh defense, I think like they're really hard to play against and they don't give up chunk plays. And that's like not really the case. Like they're very middle of the road and 20 yard gains allowed, rushing, passing. I have a hard time figuring out what they do incredibly well. I think you guys talked about it on Monday. I mean, they used to be really one of the sneaky best pass rushers in the country in terms of sacks. And like that's not.
He had 199 sacks in 4 years. Did you hear that?
That's a ridiculous number. They're actually still in the top 15, but they're not doing it with their defensive ends, Pete. And that's what they've been able to do in recent years. They're 91st in 50-yard. Oh, man, I'm not sure if that's – I can't read my own notes. I'm not sure if that's pass plays of 50 yards or just plays in general.
Hopefully for Notre Dame, it's plays in general.
Yeah, exactly. But no, they haven't. Yeah, they're still 12th in the country in sacks per game, you know, but they have to do it. They do it more with their second and third level defenders. They're still 20th in tackles for loss.
Yeah, these are things that can bother Notre Dame if you're not improved on offense from where you should be. Yeah. Like what we think Notre Dame should improve upon. These are little things that would add up, I think.
Yeah, just like Pittsburgh, I would think of them more in terms of like, the way they are, you look at their stats and they would be like fourth in yards per carry allowed. And they're not. It's just like it's a fine Pittsburgh defense, but I don't think it's sort of where I get back to this game. This game is going to have a lot more to do. Like, can Notre Dame figure itself offensively more than do they have to solve something Pittsburgh is doing? It has a lot more to do with like Notre Dame getting right.
And Wake Forest ran on them. They only averaged 4.2 per carry, but they had 172 yards and they had 41 rushing attempts. So,
that's a win for Notre Dame if they run for.
Yeah, to be fair, Wake Forest had a first-time starter quarterback, so they didn't really want to throw it. But they ran against Pittsburgh when they wanted to. I don't know that the rest of the numbers through the first six games reflect that, but I think Notre Dame can have success running the football on them.
I thought that was the most interesting take from Coach Parker's interview was how they want they're kept using the word prideful, and I think stubborn can be another one where you're wanting to be a north-south running team, but maybe after some self-evaluation, you have to find ways to get the ball outside the tackles, because as he mentioned, the way they're approaching it, third level tacklers are coming up and meeting them in the hole, and that's just not viable. I mean, maybe it is if you were to put McGlinchey, Nelson, Stanley, Nick Martin, and Zach Martin up there, but that's not the situation. His biggest concern has to be finding ways to get out of this complete 100% rock fight inside, because I don't think you want to get in a rock fight with Pittsburgh and Clemson, as opposed to just going out there and being able to beat them with your talented quarterback.
Pete, you talked about the rush per carry against them. It's still 3.1. And
yeah, it's not terrible. But like
the two safeties are the leading tacklers. They blitz a lot from the second level. And so, I mean, I think that's the whole point. They are going to dare Notre Dame to throw the football downfield. And they're obviously running a lot of man coverage from their corners. So there'll be opportunities downfield. We'll see if Notre Dame's, you know, wideouts can handle that. Now on the flip side, Pittsburgh's averaging 3.4 yards per carry, and their best running back, well, Flemister and Rodney Hammond are both averaging 4.1 per carry, which is pretty good though. When you consider that as a whole, they're at 3.4, which factors in sacks and stuff like that. So they're not good. I think Flemister is a pretty decent running back. I know we were kidding on Monday.
Yeah, I don't know if he'd heard this or not.
But we couch everything by, you know what? Sebo's a pretty good running back.
Yeah, really kind of nice.
He really is. He's gained a little bit of shiftiness, and he's still listed at, I think it's 205. He's still listed at 205, but he plays like a guy that's 230, 225.
So you're compared Sebo to like Jordan. No, like it was like Costanza was looking for a date, and he asked Jerry, how's her hair? Did she have nice hair? And he said it was really very nice and good. She's just really very, he's really very nice and good. There's nothing else going on there. It's just really very nice and good.
Well, you're not saying he's good. You're saying he's good.
And you say, you have to say it with surprise in your voice a little bit too.
You gotta tone up on the end. He's good.
It's like every
Harry Heastand ends a sentence, his voice goes up. Interesting. The over under was 45.5. It's now 44.5.
I bet it is.
like when you Notre Dame's a 20.5 point favorite, but the over under is only 44.5. So they're telling you Pittsburgh's not going to score in this game.
This is why, not the only reason, but I cannot stick with any of that upset feeling. Because Notre Dame's defense is so much better than Pittsburgh's offense. It would have to be a kick return touchdown, by the way, which happened in 2018 to keep the game close. It would have to be a sack fumble, which can happen also in sports when an offensive line isn't totally engaged. One touchdown drive and then great defense. Like that is how Pittsburgh has to get to 20 points.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. And or a Devonshire pick six, because he's had three in the last year and a half. Against Louisville.
All those type of things are what you see sometimes when Notre Dame has a bad game against a team like Pittsburgh. Yeah. It's just that you just don't see that. You don't see that offense coming from Pittsburgh. That's why I remember I said Pat Narduzzi should punt and try to keep his team in the game. Notre Dame should consider punting once in a while and keep the team in the game too, because they're not driving 75 yards.
Oh, they are going to have a tough time. Christian Vayer.
Very difficult to say and look at. Just don't look at it.
It's easy. I've known it. I spaced it there because I did a show yesterday and he was called Voyer. And so I had to correct myself. No, it's Christian Vayer, despite the spelling, and he's given him a spark. There's no doubt. And we talked about this on Monday. If a guy's open, he'll find him. Jerkovic wasn't doing that. But that kid's in trouble against Notre Dame. He's in trouble against Notre Dame because they're still doing a lot of very conservative stuff, a whole ton of check with me pre-snap. And Al Golden's defense is going to give him hell for most of 60 minutes.
Well, we know Al Golden's not focused on USC anymore, so he's probably going to be all over.
That we do know. And nobody knows that better than I do. That's very true. Before we finish segment one, I did want to talk about it. I think everybody wants us to comment on the Michigan Harbaugh sign stealing stuff and what I was saying before we went on the air, that you can't just say sign stealing, because there are two types of sign stealing. There's on the field sign stealing, which everybody agrees, or at least I do, that in football, baseball, whatever, that's completely legal. It's going to opposing stadiums and recording it and studying it. And I mean, that's just that it's comparable to what the Houston Astros did a couple of years ago. And that's wrong. I don't think anybody wants the sport to go in that direction. And there's an easy solution, of course, with the helmet microphone, which I haven't heard anybody say, no, we shouldn't do that.
NFL, I saw Danny Cannell bring it up. He's like, this is the best reason for helmet microphones.
And there's no, most players, especially quarterbacks, are saying, just make the change. And it probably will. It'll gain some legs, at least now. I don't know how soon it'll be implemented.
Well, it's going to be implemented in bowl games this year as a trial run. So we're about a month away from it happening. But that trial run doesn't mean that it's going to happen permanently. But after the Michigan stuff, you would think that, that's going to happen.
What is the reasonable argument against it if you know of one, Pete?
I don't know of one. It like costs at lower levels, probably. I think when they make these tech changes, like replay, that was an issue with replay early on, like our Mac schools. But this is just another headset from your booth to your sideline. So that this seems like much, much easier to deal with.
I think quarterbacks will complain because they're the ones that are going to have to they're going to have to say the play to the rest of the team all the time, right? The rest of the offense.
I mean, they should know it. Like, it's like, why don't you just have to repeat it, right? Like, and I don't know what the rules are for, like, when that audio cuts off.
That's a good question.
It doesn't go all the way up to the snap. I think cuts off.
Yeah. Can you imagine if it goes all the way up to the snap? How many changes will be in the scan? That Alabama is changing everything.
Well, how do you monitor when the audio is cut off?
The NFL does it, so they'll be able to do it.
Yeah, I don't know how that all works. I mean, it makes sense. Like, the signs, like, the more you think about it, it's like, what a completely messed up system this is that we have poster boards of, like, Shrek and, I don't know, just, like, various Roman numeral. Like, it's a bizarre to me that, like, how far this has gone. Like, you've got the sheets behind the coaches to stop people from the press box seeing what's going on. It's just bizarre to me that we've got
three
to this
guys
point.
Signaling, you know.
Yeah, that was the most. We should bring this up. Marcus, we asked Sean Steyers, asked Marcus Freeman about this, about signals. And he said, you know, they change them a couple times a year. It's not easy to do. I assume you change them from year to year. Otherwise, they have 9 months to look at your signals.
Signals. I mean, I asked Marcus about this before Ohio State. Like, you know, Laronitis knew all the signals.
Yeah. You have to change the offseason all the time, I would assume. Otherwise, you're giving it.
And for a player, I mean, a lot of times you just got drilled and you're not clear headed to begin with. And so now you're looking at the sideline and you're seeing six guys signaling instead of three.
But I thought the interesting thing he said was, the more if you do it too much, you're confusing your own players. Like, how good is someone that's stealing signs versus I don't want my sophomore wide receiver to block the wrong guy all the time?
Yeah. So there's one of my colleagues that they had, like, talked to a sign stealer at a program, and he gave them 10 lessons to do it, how to avoid it. But I'll just read one quote because it ties into, like, you're dealing with college kids. This isn't like splitting the atom. And the quote was, I promise you within a day I could take the average fan and watch three TV copies with them and they'll know signals by the end of it. We're trying to signal a play that a college kid has to comprehend. This isn't rocket science. The signals are not ridiculously tough to figure out. So it seems like something you'd have to change a lot to be on your stuff. But again, you can't outsmart yourself. Otherwise, it's just you're kind of chasing ghosts.
I got three fun careers for you guys, for all kids out there. Sports writer, astronaut, and sign stealer at a program, because that would be fun. I would love to be known as the sign stealer at a program that someone talked to.
I think you can make a lot of money as an interpreter too.
Yeah, that'll, yeah, I bet you can. I wouldn't be good at that though. But I'm
again,
good at science.
Yet another one of those things that I would be.
You can't do that one. Very it's like me and field goal kicking. I just can't do it. Yeah. It's not.
Hey, last thing I want to mention before we wrap up segment one, and this hasn't been announced yet, but Irish Illustrated has been, and we were the first ones, I believe, this summer to indicate that this was going to happen. The Shamrock Series game next year will be Army. We expect it to be at the end of the season. I know already, because I had in Thursday Thoughts, and already people are reacting to the degree of difficulty of Notre Dame's schedule, which includes Texas A&M to start, USC, Florida State, Louisville, and then what generally looks like a bunch of average football teams. So, I mean, Notre Dame was kind of due one of those after this year's schedule. And I know people are already saying, well, it's not that difficult. It's still a cumulative effect when you're playing the teams that Notre Dame has played four night games in a row against four ranked teams and or undefeated ranked teams.
Well, they played really good Ohio State, Clemson, and USC teams last year too. Those games were three teams were actually very good all the way through.
It's not a great schedule. It's by Notre Dame standards, it's a bad one. But this happens. Like Georgia has a terrible schedule this year.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens. Like if they had Miami, Florida instead of Army, probably feel a little bit differently about it. But these are the breaks. And maybe Notre Dame will be a playoff team in the 12-team playoff bracket in a way that I don't think we looked at last year's roster and thought like, oh, that team's going to the playoff. But who knows? Maybe with the schedule, they can make a run at it.
Yeah, and if you look at the schedules that are out there that are incomplete and kind of scrambled a little bit, there is an opening prior to Notre Dame's trip to USC. And I think we expect that's where that Army game will slot in. And that's Yankee Stadium in New York. So Notre Dame will travel in and I expect this to be announced formally by Notre Dame soon here, but travel in one direction out east. The third weekend of is that the third? I think there are five Saturdays in November next year. But anyway, late in the year, looks like Army. Some people aren't really happy with the
schedule. Two trips to New York, one trip to LA, and a trip to Atlanta are worse things in the world.
There are worse things in the world. Like, you know what's worse? The trip to West Lafayette. That would be worse. Yep.
This episode of Irish Illustrated is presented by Underdog Sports. We see a lot of you are downloading Underdog, using the promo code and having fun, which we love to see. If you haven't already, check them out. Be sure to do so. It's super easy to use. You go to the app, you pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total than what is listed. For example, if Travis Kelce's number is set at 50 yards and you know Taylor Swift is in the house, you may feel confident he's going to be way higher than that number. Do that with 2 to 5 different players and you're in business. If you go 5 for 5, you can multiply your money times 20. So sign up today with promo code Irish and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with my promo code Irish to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. There are a lot of fantasy companies out there, but we decided to partner with Underdog because it's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org. We'll be right back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards.
If you're coming to a game this season, you have to check out Game Day Your Way, the official tailgate service provider of Notre Dame. Game Day Your Way offers everything you need, including tailgate gear, catering, and even beverage delivery right to your spot. And their Irish Express transportation from Chicago allows you to tailgate while you travel to their all-inclusive party zone in South Bend. Let Game Day deal with all the hassle so you can focus on the fun. For tailgates, tickets, transportation, and more, visit GameDayYourWay.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Some things are just made for each other, like tailgates and touchdowns. We're adding one more pair to the list, Aer Lingus and college football. Join us in Dublin this August for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Too soon? Plan your winter or spring break now with non-stop flights from cities including Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles and New York. Fly in comfort to Dublin, our European hub. Go coast to coast and discover the sights of Ireland or explore any of the 50 plus European cities we connect to, including Amsterdam, London, Paris and Rome. Visit airlingus.com to book today.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first one comes from either I told Althea, which makes sense, or one told Althea. It could have hidden meaning.
I think it's one, Tim.
All right. Well, he should let us know. There is 0% chance Michigan gets a bowl ban this year, correct? No way the Big Ten would cannibalize itself like that.
I'm not a 100% guy, so I don't want to say no way, but I can't possibly. This won't be determinant during this football season. I don't believe so. I think any kind of punishment will come after this football season. Pete, you may know more about it with more of a national perspective.
I mean, not really, but it does, like, the amount of information that's coming out in real time is shocking.
It is stunning.
Well, that is true.
Reading on, like, the Big Ten's rules for this, like, the commissioner, Tony Petitti, like, not that he has unilateral control on this one, but it's close. And I think Big Ten ADs had a conference call today, which was the first one since this story got out. I wonder if they'll just, like, kind of meet in the middle and make Michigan ineligible for the Big Ten championship game, but eligible for the college football playoff. Like, I got to think they're going to do something. Yeah, like, this is just so far beyond the pale. But it's just, like, it's unprecedented. I can't think of an example like this, and since I've been covering college.
And so much more is going to come. I mean, we can't speculate about the next 6 weeks. So much more is going to come out.
Nothing that's coming out is good for Michigan.
It's not going to be like, oh, well, that explains everything coming out next. Yeah. There's two ways of looking at this for me. If I wake up one day and I see on Twitter that Michigan got a bowl ban, I'll just be like, holy cow, fall down, shocked. I cannot believe the Big Ten, the NCAA, or anybody else reacted like this. But Pete's comments about the Big Ten being punitive, where the NCAA cannot be, does make some sense. Because it really, really, really affects your conference. And the NCAA probably can't move fast enough on this. The NCAA can't move fast enough to stop Harbaugh from his next pro coaching job, much less this situation.
Right. That's what I feel like the outcome that I feel most likely to happen is Jim Harbaugh will not be Michigan's head coach next year.
But that does not do anything for this.
Doesn't do anything for the season.
No. And it doesn't do anything to Jim Harbaugh because he could just go coach for more money.
Oh, and he's already lied and saying knows nothing about it. So, like, I wonder what their press conferences are like. I mean, guys have to be, they have to be national media guys coming in town. Are they entertaining those questions during press conferences, or are those done behind closed doors? Or
I don't think he's spoken to them. They're on a bye this week, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that's true. It's amazing.
So it's just like, it just left to hang there in the room indefinitely. I don't know how you handle this story.
Well, I tell you Michigan. What, say what you say about BK, but they left that guy out to dry in 2014 when he had to answer all those questions about things he couldn't answer.
I thought that was, I know people have
the frozen four
opinions about Brian Kelly, but that was so unfair to Brian Kelly that day. It was ridiculous when an athletic administrator should have been speaking about it. And Brian Kelly kept having to do it. Brian Kelly's getting ready for USC, and he has to address
Is that when we started like 9 minutes late and everybody's like, ugh.
Yep.
There was the noon press conference just didn't start.
Not good.
Never happens. That never happens.
Not good. A couple of questions here. One from Irish Shem. Question for O'Malley. Is it true that your play calling this past weekend was your audition for the Irish offensive coordinator position? How do you think you did? Is this going to change your relationship with Priester if you get the job?
Well, yes, technically.
Are you? Yes, I expect you to elevate me to head coach then.
Yeah.
Are you open to suggestions? And then a question from somebody else that I forgot to put down who that was. Timo, are you concerned the one flag touchdown debacle may have cost you a potential analyst job on Freeman's staff?
I think Kyle Brandt's backing of me on that may have cost me an analyst job on Marcus Freeman's staff. But no, I was auditioning for the defensive coordinator position at Notre Dame because people keep ignoring that is my actual role on the 4 and 5 grade team. And we shut down. That'd be a bit much. We held the greatest show on grass to 20 points in that final. And that was a big one. But yeah, it was, I think I said this to Pete on his podcast. Like there's some funny things about play calling in those little kids games. And the number one thing, as I figured out, is the same thing Jared Parker should figure out. I realized one day on delayed handoffs, if you just let everybody spread out, hand the ball to your fast guy, there's fewer people right there to pull his flag. Find a way to get to the edge if you're Notre Dame. I found a way to get to the edge.
There are Jeremiah Loves all over the place. You just got to run horizontally.
Jeremiah Loves everywhere. You just got to get him the ball, man.
All right, question from ND Dan 106. Tim O'Malley was put on a hot seat at the press conference about his play calling. When was the last time the head coach at Notre Dame had this much fun interacting with the media?
Never, but Mike Bray had a lot of fun with media. Now, Mike Bray had 1,000 times more fun with media, not at press conferences. But Bray was a lot of fun. And Bray would come out. Bray was like Marcus Freeman when he would come out and talk to the 6 or 7 people pre-practices standing up. I mean, he always had something to say there. He had hilarious things to say. What did he tell Pete? Pete, were you there when he said, go chase the plane? Or maybe you were.
No, because I was chasing the plane.
Yeah, no. So he said to us, he goes, we finished a basketball interview with him. He's like, go to the airport, start chasing planes.
Wait, so what are you guys doing here?
No, but Mike Bray would be the one. But well, football, I think
Andy Dan 106 was asking about, he said coach. I think he was referring to the football coach. I mean, Kelly wasn't crappy to us. I mean, we had plenty of comfortable exchanges with him. We talked about the time that he slipped into our video that we were filming in the Goog. But Freeman was so prepared. It was
the notes surprised me. I actually forgot about the flag incident, to be honest with you. The one flag. I forgot that happened.
Oh, you mean before he said it?
Yes, before he said it, I was not in my mind that the one flag was going to come up. I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. I forgot it was Nico. I forgot.
That's the worst one.
Yeah, I love the way he said it because it was so reminiscent of 10 men on the field. That
I was going to say, he really opened himself. You could have zinged him big time, O'Malley.
If they had been 8-0, I would have said something. But
yeah,
people say, my wife and everybody else around me says I have no filter. I want everybody to know I proved I had a filter on Monday because I was enjoying that exchange and nothing in my mind decided to come out.
To answer this question, O'Malley, I don't know if I ever told you the story, and I know Priester knows it, but there was a time where it was like 2 or 3 weeks in a row where I asked depth charts on the Monday, Tuesday press conference to the head coach. And after like the 4th week, I didn't. And the head coach was like, Pete, no questions about the depth chart this week. I have a depth chart just for you. And he called me up to the lectern and handed me a that was printed out in Notre Dame official font and everything. And it said Pete Sampson's depth chart. And all the names were, I think they were numerical on one side and alphabetical on the other. But like it said Pete Sampson's depth chart. And that head coach was Tyrone Willingham.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I was just going to say Tyrone Willingham never had any fun at a press conference.
Not so.
There's an exception to the rule.
BK had fun pre and post press conferences to let people know. Like that would be fair, don't you think?
Yeah, and Weiss could try to insert his sense of humor into the equation too.
He said something to Pete once. Remember, Pete, after the BC game in 2009, you asked about the 9 route?
Oh, yeah.
Rich Gannell kept running nine routes for Notre Dame for like 185 yards or something like that.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, Pete Sampson, the nine route. Look at this.
Sampson talk breaking down the nine routes or something. Yeah. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. That stuff is like that. See, like that's press conference funny. What Freeman did on Monday was just funny. And that's pretty rare.
Was funny everywhere. That was.
I love the hand gestures when he said two red zone appearances, 0 points. Yeah. That was good. All right, let's talk a little bit Notre Dame Pittsburgh here. Question from Irish Disney 33: with Pat Narduzzi likely forcing Notre Dame to throw the ball down the field some in this game, how successful do you think Notre Dame will be in that area this week against Pitt?
I think it's the question of the day because Jaden Thomas is the guy I want to watch here. Jaden Thomas is supposed to be able to get off press. I thought he struggled, not getting off press, but struggled against quality corners in the NC State game before getting hurt. And then you can't judge him since he's been hurt, of course. Yeah. He's a guy that has to make a few plays. We are past the point of saying he's a guy that's going to break out, like guys breaking out. Breaking out right now for Notre Dame is 4 catches for 69 yards and a touchdown at wide receiver. Would you agree for any of them?
Yeah, definitely.
Now you barely need a touchdown.
Yeah. I think they're a back shoulder throw. If he's healthy, you know, this was the guy that they were trying to throw the ball downfield to. And a lot of it was back shoulder stuff. I would expect to see some of that.
That pass by Hartman against NC State. I know it was not an easy catch, but that's what Notre Dame has to have a receiver catch. The back shoulder all the way down the field. That's dropped perfectly
No doubt. I mean, I remember when I first started watching Sam Hartman at Wake Forest. I'm like, back shoulder. This is going to be, you have to have receivers that can make those plays. Tobias Merriweather has shown us in practice and in games, he can't make those plays. Jaden Thomas was somebody that they force fed a little bit, like we saw during preseason, but then he was injured so quickly that came and went. So it is the question of the day. And I think it starts with running the football a little bit, and I agree with the notion that Narduzzi / Randy Bates are going to make them, okay, go ahead and beat us with the passing game, prove it.
I will say, like, I'm interested to see what happens with Tobias this weekend. Freeman was asked about it on Monday and said, hey, we're gonna keep forcing the issue, and you guys talked about it on the Monday podcast. I kind of go back to the Duke game. I know that he didn't catch it, but they forced the issue early to him, and he almost caught it.
He was not interfered with, but they did face mask him on the way down.
You gotta, I think he's really somebody you gotta take a couple shots to. Like, this will sound weird because Rico Flores has been more productive, but I would almost rather them throw a deep shot to Tobias Merriweather than I would to Rico Flores.
I think that's fair because he can separate if he gets past press.
Yeah, I just no back shoulder to Merriweather. Just needs to be a
Yeah, don't do that. No more back shoulders.
Catch, right.
Yeah, contested catches are not his thing right now, I don't think. That's not.
Jaden Thomas is a good guy for that. Maybe Flores to some extent because he's strong.
I still say Greathouse.
Greathouse
can do that.
You know, Absolutely. Yeah, I've kind of like forgotten about Greathouse just because he's gone away.
Merriweather is a streak throw, you know. I mean, run and we'll throw it to you and catch it.
Next question is from T. Branson. Also a good one because I do not have an answer for you, T. Branson. Do you see the offense still riding Audric Estime, or do you think his time is nearing an end and they might spread the carries around a little more? I will insert he's not nearing an end, but could they spread the carries around a little bit more?
I don't know. I mean, you have to take opponent into consideration a little bit too. You know, the Estime's caught every pass that he's been targeted on.
Been a while though, right?
Yeah, it's been a few games. It's been a couple games at least. Yeah. But I don't know. This is hard. I mean, it's a good question. We're trying to figure it out on a weekly basis. You kind of sense that Jadarian Price is due for more because we've been talking about it with their coaches.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Love was,
I wrote a story about it. So it has to happen.
And just a couple of weeks ago, you know, it was, you got to get the ball to Jeremiah Love more, but you still want to feed Audric Estime. I still think the top three are there. It makes sense to give the ball to Jabron Payne in short yardage situations. I don't think Devin Ford really fits into the equation right now. But it's Love and Price that mainly are the guys that you're looking to feed it to more.
I, you know, if there was like a, you could do like a 4-2-1 ratio of estimate, love, price carries, or no, I'm sorry, pain carry. Yeah. DeJarian Price. Yeah. I think that that would be, you know, make more sense, but to do than what they had last, or I guess USC were estimated 22 carries.
Yeah.
And everyone else said, I think the other backs had 4 or 3. I don't know. It's just like with Price, he's had what, one carry in the last three games?
Right. I think if you're 17-5-5, and then if one of those guys at five deserves more, it's 17-5-8-9-10. That's when you can. You can't just force feed a guy if he's not running well. Like Jeremiah Love just didn't find holes against USC when I thought he would. Audric Estime ran better than Love did.
Well, I mean, the problem is, like, also, if you have 27 carries against USC and 21 against Louisville and 29 against Duke, that's just not a lot of carries to spread around. If you have 38 like you did against Ohio State, then you've got 14 for Estime, 6 for Payne, 3 for Price, 8 for Love, 2 for Ford. Like, you got to get close. If you're going to spread carries around, you got to have 40 carries to spread. You can't spread 28 carries around. It doesn't make sense. I understand why you would be slanted more towards Estime that way.
It's funny. This is like a lot of people are pulling away from Audric Estime. He's averaging 98 yards rushing a game. He's going to go over 1,000 yards easily. And it seems like there's a segment of Notre Dame fan that's kind of pushing him out.
And a big conversation about the stable, the five horsemen, the, you know what I mean? That's probably part of it.
Yeah. That's going to be the exception to the rule, mm-hmm. you know, moving forward. If Dylan McCullough moves on from this, not every running back coach can strike the balance that he's been able to do for the most part.
Price and Love are exciting and people want to see him. And Jadarian Price just had a 99 yarder.
I agree. But those are the three. And if you want to go short yardage with Payne, you know, you understand that too, because he gets lower than the lowest on the defensive side of the ball. Question from Andrew Gilmore. I think it's Gilm 41104. Is this L. Golden's last year with Notre Dame? Why aren't we hearing about a contract extension? Golden has done his part. You would think Marcus Freeman would need him for a potential transitional year in 2024, particularly in the season that starts at Texas A&M. Are contract negotiations being conducted in the public eye? I didn't realize that we would.
That was what I was going to say. Not for coordinators. You don't hear about too many contracts.
You didn't hear that on the sideline of flag football last weekend? contracts for coordinators, assistant coaches, just like if another job comes along, they go and take that job. So it's not, I don't think it's a situation where Marcus Freeman doesn't want L. Golden on staff. It's just if he can get an NFL defensive coordinator job or a college head coaching job, like it doesn't matter if he's under contract at Notre Dame, he's going to move on to that next job.
Yeah. And we think Al Golden will be, I think all of us think Al Golden will be in the NFL again. And then we even heard earlier this year that I don't get this, but that he has designs on a East Coast head coaching job. I just think that his mind for defense is NFL mind for defense and not recruiting people to a school and trying to build a program that probably won 4, 5, or 6 games.
I mean, I don't think Al Golden's legal representation is pushing for a contract extension right at this moment. I mean, it's a, if and when the time comes, he'll get it. I don't understand the perspective of this, because these kind of things aren't discussed in the public eye.
Golden has done his part. We agree with that part of this.
Well, yeah, now that we agree, there's no doubt about it. And Marcus Freeman, I'm sure, would love for him to come back next year. I this is a Golden decision, not a Notre Dame decision at this point.
No, and like Golden and Freeman share an agent. Like, this is an easy conversation to have. Like, if when the time comes to have it, they'll have it.
Dan Quinlan asks, please expand on the only 5 NFL evaluations per team. That's something we have been talking about on this podcast since at least 2018. Why is there a rule? Don't most players overestimate their NFL draft potential? Wouldn't a college coach rather have 15 guys get a draft grade that encourages most of them to come back, especially with NIL? You could selectively match the money for a key player who gets a third day grade.
Now, we've been talking about this, and Pete Sampson, you asked a question pertaining to this because we've been saying five, but we haven't had it validated as far as, you know, up to the minute, but you did get information on that.
Yeah, I checked with Dane Brugler, who works for us at the Athletics, a draft scout, and he checked with an NFL person and said, yep, the number is still five. He also said that most teams don't use all five. So it's like, if you're not getting an evaluation, that is a return to school grade. Like even the evaluations that players got in the previous years, like I remember like Jason Adamiola got one, it was return to school grade. I feel like most of the evaluations come back return to school. Like the NFL is not erring on the side of like, yeah, we'd like you to come out and then not get drafted. So, yeah, it's just like if you don't get evaluated, that means you got to return to school grade.
I agree, though, with Dan Quinlan. Most players overestimate their draft stock, and a college coach would love to have them here. You're supposed to come back from the NFL rather than from him trying to explain it to him. But if it's five, it's five, and you can't do that.
Well, and the reason it's five is because you would have 12 guys from most Power Five teams asking for an evaluation. And so you would have NFL evaluators going over, what, a 1,800 FBS players?
A lot.
500, 600 players? That's a little unrealistic to expect them to do that work. You know, they're doing that work for themselves, but they're also doing that work for the colleges as well. So, I mean, it makes sense to have a cap on it because ultimately, if every kid had asked for an evaluation, if you followed through with that, it'd be a lot of wasted time. That'd be for damn sure because most of them wouldn't be NFL prospects.
Fun question for you. Remove all graduate students from this. Name the five guys that deserve their evaluation, starting obviously with Audric Estime.
So yeah, you're saying
Howard Cross does not count. Leofau doesn't count. Bertrand doesn't count. You got to be a senior or a junior.
It's not a huge number.
Well, Joe Ault, of course.
Does he need one though? Or can he just decide if he's
But see, now you're putting different criteria in there. So
right. That's what I mean. So that's why if you have to choose five, could you say, well, like Joe, you're probably going.
Kyle Hamilton didn't need a draft evaluation. Michael Mayer didn't need a draft evaluation. You know, Xavier Watts,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Riley Mills
probably would be one.
Estimates certainly. With Tyree. He's gonna get returned to school, though, would be the grade.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, because I think that
Mitchell Evans,
definitely.
He'll get returned to school. Like, the threshold here is so, like, Isaiah Foskey got a second round grade. So it's first round, second round, return to school. And I don't, like, to be at the level of Isaiah Foskey as terms of a pro prospect is pretty high to me.
Yeah.
Long way from Watts, Evans, Mills, those types of players. So
Estime is the one that's on that. He obviously needs a draft evaluation. Estime obviously needs a draft evaluation at the end of the season. There is no, unless he's hell bent on going pro for all the natural reasons I've talked about for a calendar year.
Yeah, he may not need one at all. Like, yeah. Like Kyron Williams got returned to school, I believe.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he did. Tyree certainly would want an evaluation, understandably. I don't know, but there's got to be a limit.
It's good.
there is. So, to answer Dan Quillen's question, there just has to be a limit. Otherwise, you're just spinning your wheels with a bunch of players that aren't going to make it in the NFL.
Right. Well, free agents make it, just not the same way, right? Yeah.
Question from Packy P. Your thoughts on promoting Gino Guiduli as offensive coordinator next year? I mean, I can give you stats from his 1 year as coordinator at Cincinnati, but, you know, I think too often we immediately turn to where they're ranking in total offense, scoring offense, and then come to a conclusion. And I think it requires a much deeper dive than that.
I think there's a huge deep dive coming for Freeman and Parker, because I mean, think of how crazy this notion would have been after the Ohio State game, and think of how natural it is right now and how everyone's prisoner of the moment. Now, you can't make your wares at Notre Dame on beating NC State, Navy, Tennessee State, and CMU. But you do need a full season of evaluation, I think, too. when you're Marcus Freeman is going to look at what he, I saw a really interesting point on our board once. He's like, this is, someone said, this is Marcus Freeman's offense, not Jared Parker's offense. Jared Parker's running exactly what his coach wants him to do. And I think that's true.
It's Tommy Reese's offense.
Yeah. But I think that the approach of, I mean, you cannot ask anybody about what your identity is at Notre Dame, not having it be, we are a physical pound you offensive line run driven program. And that's the question I'd always want to ask Marcus Freeman. Are you that because that's what you have to be with personnel, because that's what you have to be with your ability to recruit top college talent to Notre Dame? Or is that just exactly what you want to be if you were given every opportunity to have everything?
I think it's a lot of the last one that you said. In terms of whose offense it is, I talked to a coach a few weeks ago, it was this post Louisville, and like Notre Dame's offense looked bad. And he said, you know, it's like one of the things, and he didn't have an answer for this, was just like, if you're a defensive head coach, you don't go out and say, like, you don't put the play calls together, but you put parameters together of what you want your offense to look like. Yeah. You could say, for example, I want to take 6 deep shots per game. You as the OC get to figure out what those 6 deep shots are, but the head coach decides this is the identity I want from our offense. You make it work. And I have no idea what Marcus Freeman's sort of identity, you go make it work, is, other than I'm going to go for it on 4th and 1 in plus territory. And that's, I don't know. I don't know if he's like, we got to take deep shots or not. He referenced it on Monday, but that may be an area where he could still be growing as a head coach about what he wants offense to look like.
I would think that his instructions there have to be pretty general. You have to allow your offensive coordinator to do what he does. Just for the record, Gino Gaudioli as offensive coordinator in 2022, Cincinnati was 59th in scoring, 79th in total offense, 60th in yards per play, 55th in yards per pass, but they lost Desmond Ridder. So you can't look at those numbers and say he's qualified, or, well, you could, I guess if they were really good, you could say he's qualified, but you can't look at those numbers and say, oh, he's unqualified because they finished, you know, 79th in total offense last year after losing an NFL level quarterback.
I would say when Luke Fickell left for Wisconsin, Gino Gaudioli was not his offense coordinator.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think it's something you got to figure in there.
I don't think that's the direction to go, because then you're going from one unproven offensive coordinator to another unproven offensive coordinator.
And this kind of goes to my point with a guy like Mickens. Like, well, do you want to promote Mickens? Like, I just want Mike Mickens to be on staff coaching corners. Whether, no matter what else happens there, I'd like to see Gaudioli be on staff coaching the quarterbacks again next year. So you want to be selfish as the coach and have both. As much as you can ever have both, you want both. You want Parker to do well, and you want to keep your quarterbacks coach, and you want Mickens to stay and Golden to stay. And I mean, you're never going to have a whole staff stay, but I don't think Freeman's looking to replace members of his staff in the offseason.
I don't think he's necessarily looking to, but as we talked about, was it in the most recent podcast or maybe last week? I mean, there's going to be change. There's going to probably be.
There's always change.
There's probably going to be fairly significant changes here. We said over 4.5, right? Didn't we have that? Pete, were you on that one?
No, that was under. I think we all went under on that one.
We all went under. Yeah.
Oh, okay. What did I say, over?
Yeah. That's a half a staff.
Okay, let me grab that word back and say. But it could be close.
Final question here is a doubler. C. Frazier, who will be Pat Narduzzi's villain during his postgame presser? And then from Matt 0315, should we be expecting another Phil Dracovic pregame Instagram post on Saturday?
I think Phil's going to be quiet. Does he have a new number yet? Is he wearing a tight end number?
No, but apparently Pat Narduzzi did confirm that he's spent some time with the tight ends and is doing some work on punt kickoff teams, but he has not officially changed positions.
But he did drop from second team on their depth chart last week to third behind Nate Yarnell. So we're not going to see Phil Dracovic play quarterback Saturday.
He's behind Nate Yarnell, but ahead of Ian Book on the depth chart, I'm told from sources inside the Notre Dame program. One other thing. Name the best player from the 2018 Notre Dame recruiting class at the end of this game. DJ Brown, Saborius Flemister, or Shane Simon, or kickoff coverage, Maven Filtrakovic.
Probably Simon. Simon will probably be the most productive. He's fourth on the team in tackles.
I can tell you what, it better not be Sibo. Otherwise, there's a problem going to the end of this game.
Yeah, that's a problem, man. That's a problem.
Put Simon number one there.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We're going to wrap it up here with your predictions for Notre Dame hosting Pittsburgh 3:30 on Saturday, Notre Dame Stadium.
Rock fight. I don't trust Notre Dame's offense to sort of get it all sorted out. I don't think Pittsburgh is very good. But I don't think Notre Dame has the offense to run away from them either. So I think I'm going to go 17-13. Bit of a trip to the dentist office for everybody on Saturday. The game will be completed, and then we will never speak of it again.
That's true, because I mentioned to Pete, the only reason we ever talk about the 2018 Pitt game of 1914 is because Notre Dame played for the playoffs that year. Otherwise, it would just be completely gone. Just like Louisville and Ian Book, the awful game in 2020. Those games
12-7?
Yeah, 12-7. Oh, remember Kevin Austin fell down twice on one slant. I remember watching Ian Book look at him like, are you kidding me right now? I just need to throw this ball to you.
What was the score when at Pittsburgh, that was at 16-12?
Yes, the Tyler Eifert game. It was 15-12.
Isn't it like Aaron Lynch and Stephon Tuitt like have huge games that night or something? Or day?
That's the pregame, though, where Aaron Lynch said Maine got 7 sacks against them, so we better get at least 10, and we never talked to him again.
Yeah.
I am not quite as low scoring as Pete Sampson, but as you know, I'm under and I have Pitt covering. I actually picked this as a loss for Notre Dame, 24-21 in the preseason back in August. And I did say that it would be at the hands of Pitt's backup quarterback, not Filtrakovic. So I'm a little worried about that one coming through. But I am going to go with Notre Dame's defense being too good, outlasting Pitt. And I would pull this down a touch rather than push it up, but I'm going to stick with 27-13. And if you told me it was 24-13, I would not be surprised.
Wow. I used 27-13 on another podcast yesterday, so I may have to look to adjusting that. But
I'm thinking healthy guy. We're allowed to say the same things. We don't know. We're guessing scores. No,
of course.
I just feel like you would hope the ND offense can look a little bit like the NC State offense maybe when they're healthy with Greathouse and Thomas. And in terms of like there's threes and outs, there's three and outs, but then they find a way to get a touchdown out of it. I mean, that was 45 points. I'm asking for 27, where you're being kind of stretched by a defense that does a great job against your offense. Remember, 6-3 and outs is a lot. That's, I think, tied for the most in like since 2016 for Notre Dame offense. So I would like to think Notre Dame could find 27 points with good field position by their defense and Sam Hartman in a running game.
It's not like Pittsburgh has shut everybody down here. They gave up 41 to North Carolina. I know it's Drake May, but Notre Dame has a competent quarterback as well. I can see Notre Dame scoring in the mid-30s. I'm not going to predict that they are, but the line's 20.5, okay? So this could end up being a one-sided game, but I just don't feel like we're in a position to predict something like that.
No, we talked about this on Monday, right? When you said it's 20.5, and or it used to be 17.5, and I was like, well, 24-6 is covering. That's the way I could see Notre Dame covering.
I think the over-under, which is now down to 44.5, indicates just how difficult it's going to be for Pittsburgh to score.
Yeah.
Now, you know, Notre Dame's offense isn't in a great place, so it indicates that as well. But I think that low total is more of a reflection of how difficult it's going to be for Pittsburgh to score. So
they need a lot of help to score in this game, but weird things happen with Pat Narduzzi and Notre Dame Stadium and Pittsburgh and all that. So that was part of my original August plan. And
remember Maurice French opening the second half.
Two Fs, and that's exactly how people felt about him afterwards.
Talented younger brother.
Yes, very true. Very true. All right, we're going to wrap up there. We appreciate you joining us here for Irish Illustrated Insider. Join us on irishillustrated.com for our pre- and post-game coverage of Notre Dame at Pittsburgh in Notre Dame Stadium this weekend. Thanks for joining us. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider.